My name is Chris McKim. I'm 47 years old. Today is Saturday, February 23rd, 2019. I'm speaking with my father, Jack McKim, and we're recording in this interview in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County. Jack, how old are you today?
I'm 76.
Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
Wow. For one thing, I was the perfect child. I was born in 1943. I had three sisters older than me, but just about 2 years apart each. And we grew up, I was born in address of Enon Valley, Pennsylvania. We grew up not far from the town. And then we moved to Petersburg, Ohio. And at that point, somewhere, I was pretty young, but my father went into the service in World War II.
When did he leave?
I don't know exactly when he left. I was pretty small then. I was born at home, you know, toward S&PJ, the camp that we have up there. And it was just in a house up there.
I remember you showing it to me.
Yes. And so we moved out there. I remember bits and pieces from when I was little that we could play on the street with because there was very little vehicle traffic. I remember having a race car that was plastic. It was white. You wound it up with a key. And I'd sit out on one side of the road, or on the road, racing this thing up and down. I don't remember my mother watching to see if I was still there or not. I don't know. But her mother, my grandmother, and her stepfather, my granddad.
What were their names?
Lloyd and Mary Schnabel. Grandma Schnabel was married before, and her husband named was Roy Garside. And Roy Garside died, I believe, when my mother was like 6 or 7 years old from spinal meningitis. And they lived down the other side of town in Petersburg, down near the Presbyterian Church, a couple doors up from that. And I remember being able to drive my tricycle down the street to see Grandma and Grandpa. Now, Grandpa was a shoe repairman.
So this is Grandpa Schnabel.
Grandma Schnabel was.
Okay.
And so after a while, I was probably 4 or 5 years old when I'm doing this. And I had a little tricycle that looked like it had a wagon on the back, but it was just all one piece. And I don't remember what day it was, but through the week that my mother would send me down to the grocery store, Hess's grocery store, to pick up a few groceries or something. And on the way down, some of the ladies would watch for me and give me a little purse with a note of what they wanted and the money. And I'd take that down, give it to the owner, Mr. Hess, and they would fill the order, put the bags in the back of my little tricycle thing, and I'd go back up the street. And each lady, I remember a couple of times, I don't remember at all, but would give me a nickel or a dime for doing that.
What do they call you?
Jackie.
You're a little Jackie. I was a little boy.
I was Jackie, yes. And you knew most everybody in town. And while we lived in Petersburg, we had a babysitter. Her name was Mrs. Warner, who lived basically across the street, but up the hill a little way on High Street. And she was, I guess, my third grandmother. And she would watch us kids. We'd have to go up there. She wouldn't come down. And then, so then in 1949 and 50, when my dad came back, I guess he was back early in the 40s or something, but he bought property over in just across the line in Pennsylvania, about 3 or 4 miles from the Ohio line, and built a ranch house. So,
is that the one I'm familiar with?
That's the one that you're familiar
on
with.
On New Road.
On New Road.
Yeah.
Yes. And that address was New Galilee, and we were like 12 miles from New Galilee, but that's the way the address was.
Weird how the rural delivery was back then.
Yes, yes. stone road, gravel. So we built a 3-bedroom ranch house, 1 bathroom, and a shower down in the basement. And growing up with 3 sisters older than me, I was pretty well spoiled.
Were you the prince?
I was the prince, yes. But, so yeah, we grew up there. That was, I spent my life there until I moved out of the house. But about 9.5 years after I was born, my brother Greg was born. And a couple years after that, I had a sister Marla that was born. By that time, my oldest sister Shelby was out of the house. She worked for, she went down to Pittsburgh, worked at Allegheny General Hospital.
Yeah, and we're talking about Lawrence County, Pennsylvania,
yes.
Which is about an hour north of Pittsburgh.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Which is where actually our first ancestors from Ireland settled.
That's right. Yeah, correct. Yes. Now, Chris, you'd know more about the ancestors part of it. Mm-hmm. So we moved over there. While we did live in Ohio, I should go back to this. Most every Sunday, my dad, mother, and us 4 kids would go back across Pennsylvania line to church, Presbyterian Church, Bethel Presbyterian. And we'd all go there with 4 kids and mom and dad. We were very seldom late for church.
That's impressive.
So, and then on Sundays, most of the Sundays that I remember, we'd go up to my dad's parents, my grandmother, Alex, and Edna.
Edna Mae Davidson.
Yes. And we'd eat dinner up there. So I remember her and my uncles, or some of my dad's brothers, would come in. And they had kids. And grandma would send them, the boys, my dad, maybe Uncle Bob, possibly Uncle Dale might have been there at times. I had to get a couple of chickens out of the coop. She'd have the water boiling already in a big pot outside, and they'd bring them up, and they'd take them out to the backyard and put them on, lay them on a stump and hook their necks there, and grandma would come out with a hatchet, chop their heads off. Then we'd dad and maybe the brothers or so, would take them, grab them by the feet, and dip them in this hot water so that you could defeather them.
Scalding water.
Scalding, I guess. Yeah. And then you'd take them in there, and grandma would be in her apron, and she'd be cooking.
So you went from being a short distance from your maternal grandparents to a short distance from your paternal grandparents.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, Grandma and Grandpa lived on McKim Road, which would be probably maybe 1.5 miles from where Dad built the house, and we lived on New Road, yeah.
There's a lot of McKims in that area now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, there was a lot of McKims there. There was cousins all over the place.
I'm going to move on to the next question.
Yeah.
Not that I don't.
Okay.
But there's more stuff I want to hear about you. Okay, well, we talked about your grandparents and your great-grandparents. Well, did you have contact with your great-grandparents?
No.
No. Okay, just the grandparents. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences in your life?
And if you can't, or you can, it's fine.
It's just a conversation.
I would have to say, first of all, be my father. He didn't teach me everything I knew, because I, growing up, I thought I knew it all. So, anyway, but I would have to say my father would be the greatest influence. I mean, it's being, you do your work, you're honest, and you just don't take BS from people. You admit when you're wrong. So I would say my dad would be the...
And he passed on his trade to you as well.
Yes, he passed on. Yeah, he was a carpenter all his life. His two brothers, all the brothers were carpenters. There was four boys. And my granddad, Grandpa McKim, was a carpenter.
That was Alex.
That was Alex McKim, okay. Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Huh. And so he passed that trade on to me. And but I think I learned my traits from him, basically.
And I know from growing up out there, the McKims had an excellent reputation for their skill.
Yes, yeah. They did. Yes. And then I came along.
Well, all good things have to come to an end.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
Whether it would do any good or not, don't be cocky, which didn't work. You know, but that's what I would do, man, and that's what I would. I think that's good advice. I think I might have gave it to my boys too, Chris and Craig, of not to be a know-it-all. I guess that's what I'd give my teenage self, you know.
I recognize that advice, the cocky and the know-it-all part about there's always somebody that can either beat you in a fight or knows more than you do.
Right, exactly.
No matter how smart you really are or how tough you really are, there's always somebody else.
Yep, exactly. Yeah,
that was always good. Can you tell me about one or two people that you remember who have been particularly kind to you in your life? And if they were here, what would you say to them?
I remember being, they call it middle school now, but I went to Mount Jackson Elementary, and in those years, I think it was in 7th or 8th grade, I had a teacher called Ruby Harbaugh, and she was I think she was like 900 years old then, but she was always someone that the kids, myself included, could talk to, and she never would put you down. She always built you up, no matter what. Any kid that I've ever heard her talking to, even the big bullies, you can do better. You're doing good. Yeah, so Ruby Harbaugh would be, I think, in my elementary.
She was good at encouraging.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're very good in that.
Do you remember what subject she taught? Or was it more of
a, I think it was more of a reading something. I don't remember, honestly. Yeah, so I would say Ruby.
Ruby Harbaugh.
Yeah.
That's good. Of the people you've lost in your life, who do you miss the most, and what is it about them that you miss? Geez, I can't even ask a question.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I guess I would have to say people I lost in my life. I'd have to say my father. Hmm. And my Uncle Chuck.
Right.
You know. My dad, he was tough, but he was fair. There's been times, you know, since he passed away in 1990, that even being on a job or working around my house or something, not being sure what to do, I would find myself saying, you know, walk away from the project I'm trying to do or whatever, and say, okay, Pap, what do I do? I've done that dozens of times. And then for my Uncle Chuck, who is my mother's sister, Aunt Jean, her sister, her husband, he was always gentle. I guess I was like his adopted son. He had one daughter, Derek Hay, my cousin, who's 4 years younger than I am. But he was always, they'd come over and he was always, you know, just plain nice. Super nice
to me. I remember.
Yeah.
I still have his bathrobe.
Do you really?
Yeah. You gave me his bathrobe after he passed. And
yeah.
I still have it.
I'll be darned.
It's blue.
I forgot about it. Yeah. I remember now with Uncle Chuck, you know, he died. I can't honestly tell you when, but he had Parkinson's, dementia. I do remember this, that I was living down in near Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I'd go home on the weekends back to Newcastle, toward Newcastle, toward Mike Jackson, back home. And my Aunt Jean was taking care of my Uncle Chuck at home. He was bedridden. You know, he didn't know Aunt Jean. And I'd walk in and my Aunt Jean would say, shake her head and say, you don't know anybody. And I walked in and he was staring straight ahead. And I got down beside him and looked in his face and I'd call him Charlie. I said, Charlie, what are you doing? He said, and it was just like, his eyes, you could very hear his eyes, eyelids snap, and looks at me. He goes, Jack, my boy, what are you doing here? But then he'd go back to the way he was, you know. So that's the two people that I would say, you know.
That's neat. I the first I ever heard of Parkinson's was with Uncle Chuck.
Yeah.
So what's one of your happiest memories?
Happiest memory? When my oldest son was born. Then when the second son was born.
For the record, I'm the oldest son.
Yeah. So that's, I would have to say those are my happiest.
Oh, good. I would hope to be.
It's getting a little teary in here, folks.
I was hoping it'd be toward the top of the list, at least. What are you most grateful for?
Well, we're going to go back to the boys. That I am so grateful that both of my boys have turned out to be exemplary men. Now, I wasn't too excited about my oldest son, Chris, who's interviewing me, when he called me up one time when he was in IUP, saying that he's thinking about going into criminal justice to be a cop. Okay. But right now, I don't know if there's any questions coming up about this or not. We're sitting in his office in Effort of Borough Police, and he is a lieutenant. And he has been here for 25 years. So I am very proud of him. His brother, who is like 5 and a half, 6 years younger, I'm very proud of him. I mean, I guess the proudest moment and the most scary moment was when he decided to leave home and go out to Las Vegas.
Mm.
You know, and he just did that. That's where he was going. So, and he's done well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Craig has worked security. He's been in executive protection. He went over to Qatar or Qatar, whatever you call it, for 7 months. I think.
Yeah.
7 months for security over there. He comes back, and now he's moved to Carlsbad, California. He does a little bit of protection work, but he's in networking, trying to work that out. So those are the proudest people. Well, those are the ones that I'm proudest of.
So you made a mention of this decision that I made to be the police business, and this isn't on the script. Or one of the suggested questions, but I'd like you to look on the wall over your left shoulder and tell me what that picture on the wall is.
That's a picture of Chris and myself when I graduated from Allegheny County Municipal Police Officers Academy.
So it's a picture of you in a police uniform and a wide-eyed, handsome young blonde kid.
Yes.
About 7 years old there.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. That's what that is.
Why did you go to the police? What were you doing there? What was the purpose?
Well, when we were living up back in Lawrence County, lived in a township, North Beaver Township, which bordered the Ohio line, just for reference. And I was always interested in police work. My dad had a buddy that was a police officer in the township for years. Bill Kildew.
Oh, I know that. Okay.
Yeah, he owned Kildew Copper Lumber.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And anyway, so a friend of mine was a constable, and he needed help serving papers and stuff, so I became his deputy constable. So we served papers for the district attorney and whoever else, you know, magistrates. And then at that time, we only had two police officers in the township, and they were always part-time, the chief and assistant chief. So the township supervisors asked us, my partner and I, if we wanted to be, we'd go to the training to be a police officer, part-time police officer in the township. So that's why I went, you know, and it was, you know, it didn't pay much. But I really, really enjoyed it, you know. And that's why I thought, you know, my son was nuts to go into it. Because, yeah, I mean, there's danger everywhere, you know. We didn't have that much out there because we were all rural. The biggest, I guess, dangers we had was domestic incidents at different places, you know, and maybe... since our township was dry, we surrounded a little borough called Bessemer, which had three bars, I believe it was, in there. And we'd get caught in there once every so often to break up a bar fight or things like that. But I really totally enjoyed being a police officer because of the help that you could give people. They would call for, you know, some really dumb things, and you'd go and you'd take care of it. So it was just being able to help people.
Yep.
That's after
Yeah, I didn't. Okay, well, we can have some fun here.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the dumbest thing you ever did in your life?
I would have to, back when I was probably 18 years old, I don't know if it's the dumbest thing, but it's the one thing I can think of. I was out one night, probably just being out late. I don't know if I probably had a couple beers or something. I come home and I was delivering milk door to door. That was my job for a dairy not far from our house. And I had a 1957 Plymouth that I had bought. And I get in at midnight, have to get up at 4 in the morning to go over and load up the truck and be out by 5. And probably a mile and a quarter or so from Dad's house where I was living, went down over a hill, fell asleep, and put two mailboxes through my windshield. Good thing I fell sideways, I guess, because both of them landed. One landed in the back seat, and the other one landed on the back deck by the back window.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, I could have taken my head off, yeah. Probably. Yeah. So I'd say that was one of the dumbest things I've ever done.
Being out late.
Crashing into mailboxes.
Yes.
Right? How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, I'd like to be. I don't think I've lived up to it.
Who does? I mean, not who does think that you did.
Yeah,
which of us has lived up to it?
I guess if I can be remembered as being a decent, caring person, I guess that would be the ultimate. I don't need all the accolades and things that go by, you know. I think that would be it. Just
a caring individual.
A caring individual, yes.
You've demonstrated a lot of that throughout life, but also with your granddaughter.
Yes.
Joanne is a very sweet girl. And she's lucky to have you.
If you want something to say something, you can. We'll move on.
Yeah.
I'd have to expound. Yeah, right. I don't want to record everything. Thinking about your family many generations from now, and knowing that they are hearing this recording, or they might, is there anything you want to say to them, and any wisdom or advice you'd like to share?
Yes. For future generations, including my grandchildren, now I've imparted, I think, most all the knowledge to my sons, because I'm dumber than hell right now. They took it all. And knowing them, they're going to pass this on to their children and grandchildren. And hopefully that just kind of snowballs into their children, you know, passing it on down the line. And like I said before, I'm most proud. My boys. And so there's no doubt that that's what they'll do with their children. Chris has 4 children, amazing kids, which he's taught those kids, those boys, along with Chris's wife, Christine, has taught those kids right and wrong, respect, and I think they'll be good, but that's what I'd like to pass on.
Thank you.
Why did you agree to do this interview today?
People tell me I'm nuts. Well, I agreed to do this interview, Chris, because you asked me if I would. I didn't think about it until you mentioned it again. And then it became kind of anxious of not knowing all the questions, which I guess I don't need to know. But when you explained that, you know, just you wanted to do this to pass it on, that's a good idea. I'd like to do that.
But let's talk about your military service. When did you enlist?
In 1963, around 1963, I started going to Youngstown University. It wasn't a state university at the time. And I joined the National Guard, which was going on in that time. Vietnam was a big thing. And it was starting to wind down. So I went to the Guard basically to get on to finish my education. And I got to do that. I didn't get to finish it, but so I went to the college. Then I get a letter that I'm supposed to go, you know, show up at Fort Knox, Kentucky for the National Guard. So I went into the National Guard, went down to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and went through the basic training. And then after the basic training, I went out to Fort Sill, Oklahoma for my MOS, which was, they called it 13E20, which is fire direction control, which meant that I would sit in a, at the time, you know, in a building or in a truck, a box truck or something. And we had people they called forward observers out looking at the enemy. He'd radio back to where they were. I'd plot that on a graph, call back to the guns, which was 105s at the time, and they would fire into that. That's what I did most of the time. I loved it. You know, then you'd go to summer camp for every 2 weeks every year. It was a good, you know.
Where did you drill? The weekends. Where were you?
Newcastle, Pennsylvania Armory.
Down there by Cascade Park?
Yes, down by Cascade Park.
Okay.
That's where we'd go for the weekend. 1 weekend a month.
Was there an episode with a tank?
Yeah. Yes, there was an episode with a tank.
I think it's important that we all hear about that.
Yeah. I don't remember what year it was, but anyway, they brought in a Army tank by truck, and they dropped it off at the in front of the Cascade Park. It was basically an empty lot along the road there, and one of our motor pool guys, mechanic, Sergeant Curry, after drill, I mean, he liked to tip the bottle a little bit, you know, and decided that it'd be a good thing to start that thing up and take it for a spin around the empty park or empty lot. It was all grass. So, you know, I was afraid of getting caught, you know, so that's what we did. And that was on a Saturday. Sunday, we go for basically till maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But, yeah, we got called out on that. Nothing really happened, I mean, disciplinary-wise. But that was one of the – wasn't I won't say that's the dumbest thing, but, you know, I didn't drive it. He did.
Well, you didn't have a license problem.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Is there someone that you served with that you can remember fondly? And tell me about him or her.
Yeah, I would say that there's a guy when I was in basic training by the name of Ron Gibson. That's his name. And he was up near, from Fremont, Ohio. And when he was in basic, Ronnie was really a good guy. He really was. But he was an amateur weightlifter, bodybuilder. And he didn't have a neck. I mean, he was built like a Tasmanian devil. Super nice guy. And Ron was in, he was a black belt in martial arts. So Ron would teach me, you know, off duty, he'd teach me a lot of this stuff. And then we got into where we could go home. We'd get a pass, but you couldn't go more than 50 miles from home. And we were down in Fort Knox, Kentucky. He decided that he was going to go back to Fremont, Ohio, which up towards Sandusky. So he he didn't have any civilian clothes. So he wore a pair of my blue jeans and a shirt. It wasn't flannel, but it was a long sleeve shirt. But he could only button the top bottom two buttons because his chest was so big. So he left. I didn't know when he left. He probably left on a Friday night. But come Monday, he's not home yet. I'm back at the base. And our drill instructor came to me and says, "Where's Ron?" And I says, "I don't know. Well, he better get back here. He's going to be AWOL." Well, he showed up Tuesday morning sometime. So I covered for him. I was a acting sergeant at the time. I was, had a squad in the platoon. So we covered for him. But Ron joined basic. We had rivals in different buildings, but we were rivals with the regular army. They didn't like National Guardsmen. And so I was out, they had a roach coach come up after chow time at night, you know, that was to buy, you know, hot dog sandwiches, popcorn. But the regular guys weren't allowed, only the sergeants were allowed to go out and get this. So I'd get a list. The guys would give me a list of what they wanted the money. I'd go out, buy the stuff in the drill field.
Now, this is after your tricycle.
This is after my tricycle, yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Go out and get it. And, so the road coach would pull in and I'd go out, and here there's three guys come across the drill field and started giving me a rough time about being a National Guard, or, you know, a weekend warrior, whatever they call us. And so here I hear someone yell, and here comes Ron out the second floor down the rain spout, come over just to even the odds between three against one, and it didn't take long. I mean, he had all three of them on the ground. So, anyway, but that Ron would be, yeah, he would be the one I'd remember the most.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Craig, my brother, was an athlete in school.
Yes.
What memories do you have of his athleticism?
From the time he was playing elementary basketball, he gave me heartburn. He was a good ball player. He wasn't NBA, you know, material, but he was good. He was a good team player. Growing up, he had his peers, which was the same age or maybe a year older, that he thought was really good. He never gave himself enough credit in playing ball. That was throughout his career. I think until he turned like senior and he was playing varsity ball, And I remember I'd be living down in Lancaster County. I'd go up on the weekends. And to see him play on a Friday night or whatever. And I would say to him, well, why don't you dunk his ball? I mean, like I said, a real good Tim Clare. Good defense, good ball player. He says, well, I can't. And I remember sitting in the bleachers watching him up at Mohawk School where he went. And my eyes were level with the rim, and when he'd go up for a rebound, and his wrist or his arm would be like 8-10 inches above that rim, and he didn't realize it. So that's one of the memories I have with Craig.
Yeah. Didn't know his own strength.
Didn't know his own strength. Didn't know. I mean, he was good in basketball, and he ran track.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very good in track.
I believe he still holds the triple jump record.
Yeah, he still holds his triple jump, and he graduated in
1996.
He still holds that. It's still on the wall in Mohawk School.
We're down to just a few minutes left, so I'm going to scroll through some of these things and pick better questions there. You were you delivered milk. What did you do with the money? Like, what did you spend your money on when you were not working?
College.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Save it up, buy a car. I will say that when I was doing that, I delivered milk for 11 months because one of the regular drivers went to service.
Mm.
His name is Bob Kuhn. And during that time, a lot of the money, now I'm not complaining, but my dad was laid off from work, from construction. It was really dead that year. And my sister, second oldest sister, Shirley, and I would take turns making the house payment or buying groceries.
Hmm.
So we did that. So that's where...
So you contributed to the household in tough times.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's an admirable thing. What are your thoughts about God? You have 2.5 minutes to tell me.
I truly believe there's a God. It's kind of hard at times when you can't see something and to have faith and to express this to your children or your grandchildren. You got to believe in God, okay? Now, the way I took care of this on my side, they say, well, what's God look like? Well, a burning bush, separated water. I put Jesus' face on God. So when they say, well, you know what God looks like? Yeah. We're made after his image, which is his son also.
Huh. It's a good concept.
Well, I don't know if it's the right one, but that's the way I do it. Yeah. Huh. So.
Cool.
And I will.
Go ahead.
Hold on, so pretty close.
Yeah. Okay.
I will say this, that Chris's children were taught about God, Jesus, the Bible, and I've never met 4 kids that can say a prayer for whatever. Mainly it's, doing grace or saying a blessing at a dinner table or something more eloquently for their age than Chris's 4 kids.
Hmm. Thank you. I think they just like being the center of attention.
Yeah, well, it could be, but they're good.
All right, we're really at the end of the time here. We couldn't probably have another meaningful question asked, but I think we got through all the stuff.
Good.
And I appreciate your time and your willingness to do this.
Well, thank you. Hope I didn't disappoint you.
Not at all. Not at all. This was very rewarding. So I'm going to stop the recording now.
Sure.